All right, we're beginning here on the top of Chavavim and Aleph with the new Mishnah. Yesterday, we dealt with the Mishnah about Kinyanim with regards to the Behemoth. We talked about the Kinyan Meshicha, Mesira, and Hagbah. Over here, we're talking about the Kinyanim that are associated with Karkaot or real property. Nechasim Sheyesh Lehem Achrayut. Property, items that have recourse associated with them. As Rashi notes over here, Hainu Karkaot. And Nechasim, property or objects that have recourse, is dealing with karka, is land. Shachrayut kol adam haloveh v'anoshe b'chaveru alehem v'fi shekayimim v'omdim. That everybody, when they lend money to a party, relies on land as being the collateral for that, because they don't go anywhere. Land doesn't walk. Land can't be spent. It can't be wasted away. The land is always there. V'fikach nismachim alehem. And that's why they are known as nechasim sheyesh lehem achrayut, as property objects that have recourse, because they are the primary collateral that people use when they lend, and therefore real property is known as nechasim sheyesh lehem achrayut. They are niknim in three drachim: kesef, shtar, and chazaka. Kesef is very straightforward, which is through money purchase. Shtar is a document, a deed, something that enumerates the transaction in it. And then the last one is chazakah, which Rashi describes over here. The Gemara will also deal with it a little bit. Is rafak beipurta. He hoed up, or he moved a little bit of the land. Odaish amitzre. He walked the borders of it. Or na'al uparatz koshu. He locked up or opened up, meaning that he put up a fence. He took down a part of a fence. He did something that demonstrates his ownership over the land. That's called a chazakah. She'ein lehem achrayut. On the other hand, items that do not have recourse associated with them, those would be known as mitaltalim versus karko that we mentioned before. Ein niknim ele mishicha. They can only be acquired by mishicha, which is the kinyan mishicha that we saw yesterday. The truth is that that is not an exclusive vehicle or mechanism for acquiring of mitaltalim, because we know that a kinyan akbah works with mitaltalim. And when it says here, kinyan mishicha, it doesn't mean that it's the sole way to acquire, but rather the primary way. That's where people normally acquire mitaltalim, is by mishicha. They take it, but hagbah is just as good, and even in some instances, mesira will work. Nechasim she'en lehem achrayut. Now, when it comes to non-real property, niknim im nechasim she'esh lehem achrayut. Bekesef, b'shtar, b'chazaka, they can be acquired through or with nechasim she'esh lehem achrayut, which means real property. This is what's otherwise known as a kinyan agav, which is that when you acquire the property, agav, along with the property, you can also acquire other items, mitaltalim. So if there's a transaction that incorporates both real property and non-real property, the kinyan on the real property functions not only as the kinyan for the real property, but also for the non-real property. The opposite would not be true. If you are kone, if you do agbah on the mitaltalim, does not mean that you're kone the karka along with it. It's clear here, because real property is seen as a primary asset versus mitaltalim, which are seen as secondary or tertiary. So the primary type of asset could acquire the less important asset, but that's not true. If the less important asset has a kinyan, it's not going to drag along the karka with it. Any one of those mechanisms of kinyan that work by karka work here with the kinyan agav as well. Mitaltalim do have the ability to impact on real property, and that is the instance of a shvuah. The Gemara learns with regard to a shvuah that you only take a shvuah on something that is inherently valuable and something that is mitaltalim. They learned that out from the pasuk. It's a klal upratu klal, the ke'ena prat over there. Inherent value comes to exclude the case of a shtar, and metaltalin come to exclude the case of karka or avadim. That grouping is usually together. Shtar, karka, and avadim are excluded from a number of halachot because of a klal upratu klal. One of those halachot is a shvuah. So if you're in Beit Din and the claim or the litigation revolves around karka, you would not take a shvuah on the karka, gzerata katuv. But if it's metaltalin, if the litigation is about metaltalin, Beit Din can force or demand a shvuah. So if you come to court and are litigating both matters, matters that revolve around real property and non-real property, then if you're forced or compelled to take a shvuah because of non-real property, we can throw in the real property, or we can have you take a shvua on both of them. That's what it says here. These metalkalim cause or can pull along the real property, lishavalim, to cause you to take a shvua on them. It's somewhat akin to what's called the Gilgul shvua that we saw in Sota, which is once we have you already taking a shvua, we'll get other things in with it. Over there, it's more expansive in nature. Here, it's specifically about the case that if you have non-real and real property, the exemption for real property be overcome by the fact that you have to take a shvua for non-real property. So here you have each one of them contributing in one way. Real property can acquire non-real property along with it. That's a kinyan agav. And non-real property, metaltalim, can, through their shvua, drag along the karko, the real property, to have it take a shvua. And that's the Mishnah here gives you, that each case, they help out. The real property helps to acquire the non-real property, and the non-real property helps to bring a shvua onto the real property. And now the Gemara says, b'kesef minolon. How do we know that you can make a kinyan through kesef? Amar chizki, amar kra, the posuk. Again, we go to Yirmiyahu, which you've seen so many times as the source for transactions and shtarot, which we quoted earlier in the Masechta, as well as in the Gemara in Gittin. Sadot, b'kesef, iknu. They will purchase fields with money. Ve'ema adika shtar. Wait a minute. Over there, it doesn't just say that they bought it with money. It says, dichtiv, v'chatov, v'sefer, v'chatom. That you should write it down and sign it and certify it. So there is a need for a shtar as well. It says, iktiv yiknu lebesov kidamart. If the word yiknu is written after everything is enumerated, then you're right. Hashu dichtiv yiknu meikara. Since over here it says, sadot bekesef iknu, that already tells you the kinyan is revolving around the kesef. So kesef koni, shtar raya v'almahu. The acquisition, the kinyan, is done through kesef. Then the shtar, or the purpose of the shtar here, is simply as a shtar raya. It's an evidentiary document, which documents the fact that this transaction took place. But it's not the vehicle for the kinyan, because the word kinyan is associated with the kesef. Tosafot over here asks, why is it that the Gemara does not bring the proof that kesef is the vehicle for acquisition from Marat HaMachpelah with Ephron? The Gemara already used that as the vehicle or the reason why by Kiddushin we can use kesef is because of Gzer Shavah to the Kinyan by Ephron in the Karka. But that shows you that Kinyan Karka goes through kesef. Why are they bringing a Pasuk in Yirmiyahu when they have the Pasuk in Breishit? So Tosfot answers something interesting. He says, Mishum de Dilma Hani Mile Minachri Shekol Kinyo Bekesef. Maybe that's only a transaction with a non-Jew, where the Kinyan with a non-Jew has to be through Kesef. Now, that statement of Tosfot, it is subject to a machloket in the Rishonim as to what are the vehicles or the Kinyanim that work with non-Jews. It's clear that Kinyan Kesef works, and that's what Tosfot is saying, that maybe Kinyan Kesef, which is the vehicle of Kinyan, for Nachrim, that's why it works over there, that's why it was demanded over there. But that doesn't prove anything that a Jew can't use another vehicle, or that Kesef works by a Jew. There are other Rishonim that believe that there are other ways to create a Kinyan with a Nachri, and it's actually very relevant, because we're coming up to Mechirat Chametz by Pesach. When they sell the Chametz to the Goy, they actually do it with numerous types of Kinyanim, to ensure that they get a Kinyan that works with the Goy. So they do a Kinyan Kesef, they do probably a Kinyan Chalipin as well, they do a contract, shtar, they do a number of forms of kinyanim to ensure that they hit a kinyan that definitely works with the nachri, because the rishonim are somewhat uncertain as to which kinyanim work or which exclusively work or which don't work with regards to a goy. Here, Tosafot suggests that because the goy has a kinyan kesef, that might explain Ephron, and I can't learn or extrapolate from that to kinyanim b'klal Yisrael. So Amarav, lo shanu el b'makom she'en kotvim et shtar. It's only in a place where they do not document the transaction. But in a place where they do document the transaction, lo kana. There is no kinyan until the shtar is signed. So what Rav is noting over here is that a sale or a kinyan revolves around what's called gmirat hadat, which is that the person in his mind believes that he has crossed over some sort of threshold by which the transaction is now complete and binding. So now, midina Torah, kesef would suffice to do that. Simply giving over the money would create the acquisition. But what Rav notes is in places where they have shtarot, they have contracts that evidence the transaction, over there people in their minds do not have gemir tadat until the contract is drawn up. People will not believe or acknowledge the fact that this is complete until the shtar is there. And that's what Rav is saying over here. Despite the fact that kesef is koneh, in places where they also write a shtar, they will not be gemir tadat, or the sale will not be considered final until the shtar is drawn up. The parish, parish. Now, if they state otherwise, meaning that if they want to make the deal work where kesef is konan, that's the end, they can do such. Since this is an agreement between parties, the two parties can agree to anything. As long as they agree to it, then they can make the threshold for the completion of the transaction, the kesef. But the default situation, if it's not specified otherwise, would be that kesef is konan, and in places where they write a shtar, that wouldn't work until the shtar is drawn up as well. Kihad Rav Idi Bavin's practice was this way. Kizavin Aro, he used to purchase land, Amar. Ibeina Bekasva Ikne. Says, if I want, then the money will be the completion or the finality of the transaction. Ibeina Beshtar Ikne. And if I want, the shtar will be the completion of the transaction. This way he got the upper hand in both situations. Ibeina Bekasva Ikne. If I want, I can exercise my right that the transaction is done with the exchange of the money. Because if the seller wants to back out, he can say, sorry, transaction's done because the kesef was koneh and the kinyan is complete. Or if I want, I'll have the shtar be the vehicle for acquisition, or really the completion of the acquisition. If I want to back out, I can still back out. So what he's saying is that there is some sort of delay between the exchange of the money and the documenting of the transaction. And he says, I get the better of both worlds. Now he could do this because the parish. He explains that. That was the agreement between them. That if I so choose, the money is the transaction threshold, and it's over then. If I so choose, it won't be over until the shtar is drawn up. That way he gets the advantage if, for whatever reason, the seller wants to back out. He can say, listen, the money already came into my hands. Deal is done. You can't back out of it. On the other hand, if he wants to back out of it, he can say, even though I have the money now, I'm just going to return it to you because the shtar was not drawn up yet. This way he gets the best of both worlds. Again, he's stipulating this in the transaction, so the other party knows this, but he got the upper hand by doing such a thing. Ubishtar minolon. When it comes to a shtar, how do we know that a shtar also works as an acquisition vehicle for karka, for real property? If you say from the Pasuk in Yirmiyah that we just quoted before, that says that a shtar was a part of the transaction with Yirmiyahu, then Vamart Shtaraya Baamu. Didn't we already discard that by saying that the Yiknu was going on the Kesef and the shtar was just an evidentiary document? It wasn't a shtar kinyan. Elamihocha. Bekach et Sefer HaMikna. Because over there it also says that I took the Sefer HaMikna, the document of acquisition. Amar Shmuel, Loshonu Ela Bishtar Matana. That's only true when it's a gift. Aval Bemecher Lokana Achitain Lo Damim. But when it comes to a sale, then until the money comes into hand, nobody believes that the transaction is over. Till you see the money, then the guy doesn't believe that the transaction is over. What Shmuel does is almost the opposite of what Rav did before, but is the same, in the same vein. Which is that in cases where both Kesef and Shtar are involved, then people don't believe that the transaction's over until you get both aspects here. If you give a contract, the contract is not considered binding in a sense, or the finality of the transaction, until the money changes hands. And Rav said the other way around, that when you have the money changing hands, the transaction is not complete until the shtar is drawn up. And in that way, basically what you have is in a completion of a transaction, you need both shtar and damim and kesef in order to complete the transaction. And that's despite the fact that either the money itself was the kinyan, and the shtar is just a shtar raya, that was Rav's statement, and over here by Shmuel, where the contract is binding, and the contract's enough in it, it's a shtar kinyan, and you could have used this as the vehicle for a transaction. Nevertheless, in people's minds, they don't. The lo gamar mocher makneh dekabel damim. The seller does not have gemir at hadat until he sees the money. And that's just talking about the realities of the transactions. What Shmuel is saying is that's the reality in their time, which is that people did not rely on the contract alone. They wanted to see the money. Today, if you can have a transaction and many business transactions and house sales relies simply on the contract. And once you come to contract, that's the finality. People leave, it's over. They don't need the money to change hands. Certain instances, they say that without the deposit, then it doesn't go through. There you have both models. You have a model where the contract itself acts as the vehicle of kinyan. In other cases, you have a model where you need at least a portion of the money or something to come through in order for the transaction to be done. So in those cases, whatever is the common practice becomes the gemirat hadat. Seller will not have in his mind that he's completed the transaction until he has what normally is the practice here. And Shmuel saying that normal practice in their area was that till money changed hands, the mocher didn't believe that the sale was going through or that there was finality to the sale. The only thing we have left open, which is not addressed by the Gemara, is the case of chazakah. When Rav made a statement before about shtar, he says, even in a place where they do kesef as the kinyan, you still have to wait for the shtar. What about chazakah? In places where they use a chazakah, do you also need the damim to be there? Or is this unique to shtar? So here the Rishonim differ as to whether when Rav made his statement, it was a generic statement. Anytime when you have a shtar raya, an evidentiary document that is drawn up, then every other kinyan is held in abeyance until that shtar raya comes through. That doesn't matter if it's kesef or chazakah. Or is Rav saying this particularly with kesef? That with kesef you need the shtar, but by chazakah, chazakah alone would be enough. That's not clear from the Gemara, and therefore the Rishonim take both positions here as to what the din is with regards to chazakah. All right, now, Meitiv Rav Hamnuna. B'shtar Ketzat. How does it work? What is a kinyan shtar? Katav lo al niyar ol cheres. They write for him on paper or on a shard of pottery. Afo bi she'en b'em shaveh pruta. Despite the fact that they have no inherent value, this seems extraneous and probably just topical to Kiddushin, because over here, the value of the shtar is meaningless. In the case of Kiddushin, there it makes sense to tell you that the shtar is not worth a pruta, to tell you that you're using the shtar as the vehicle for Kiddushin and not the shaveh pruta, not the value of the shtar. Over here, why should it matter that the shtar has a shaveh pruta? Some Rishonim try to give significance to this, but in all likelihood it's just dragged along from other mentions in Kiddushin. Sadai mechura lecha, sadai netuna lecha. Hazeu mechura venutuna. So that my field is sold to you, my field is given to you, and there the transaction is complete, and the field is sold, or the field is given. Now the simple reading of this is that you have two cases over here, and it's just combining the two cases. One's a sale, one is a gift, and this is how you write a sale, mechura lecha, and then it's harizu mechura, or if you want to give a gift, you say netuna lecha, it's given to you, and there is a netuna, that's how you would read it. The question Rav Hamnuna is presenting is that Shmuel said before, you require the kesef to change hands in order for the kinyan to go through. Over here, you have a statement, a breita, that tells you that how does shtar work, and it tells you shtar, no kesef. So you see that shtar by itself should be sufficient. So who motivla? He asked the question, but mefarikla, and he answered it. V'mokher sadeo mipnei rata. The case where he's selling his field because it's so bad. Or he has had trouble selling this item, and now that he finally got a buyer for it, he's so anxious to get it done and to have it completed, he doesn't wait for the money. The fact that he got someone to agree to buy this item, that's enough for him. He wants it off his hands. So the case of kesef is in a normal transaction where he has plenty of buyers, and he just, the question of completing it with this individual. You show me the money, the transaction's over. In a case where there's only one buyer and he's been waiting for all this time just to finally get a buyer, as soon as the contract is signed, he says, it's out of here, it's done. I don't want this guy backing out of it. And therefore, he won't wait for the kesef. The mocher will have gemirat hadat at the time of the contract. Vashi amar, b'matana b'keish nitna lo. Now, this is a case where it was really a gift. B'lama katav loshon mecher. So why did he give him loshon mecher? K'dei liyapot et kochol. Strengthen his position here. So what Rav Ashi does is, what I mentioned to you when we read the Breita, which is that the Breita reads on Pashtut that you have two cases. You have a case of mecher and you have a case of matana. The question on Shmuel is from the Mecher case, because by Matana, he agrees that Shtar is sufficient. By Mecher, he says you also require Kesef. So the first answer that we gave is from Rav Hamnuna, who said that the case of Mecher was Mipnei Rato, and that's why he didn't need Kesef. The way that Rav Ashi solves the problem is to say there's only one transaction here, it was a Matana. The whole transaction is a Matana. Well, by Matana, Shmuel agrees you don't need the Kesef, the Shtar is enough. Then why is he writing Mechura Lecha if he is giving a Matana? So what the Gemara answers is that he wants to give a gift with superpowers. When he gives a gift, both as a gift and as a purchase, he gives him the best of both worlds. Now, what is the best of both worlds? The Tosafot over here already discusses what exactly the best of both worlds is, because, number one, by a matana, a gift is exempt from the din of the bar mitzvah. Din of the bar mitzvah is that if I sell a field to a particular party, the other owners who have the surrounding fields have a right of a first refusal to come in and buy it at the same price. Because it makes sense. They could have contiguous property over here. It makes sense that they should have a right to buy it. And for the seller, if he loses nothing by selling it to the neighbor versus another party, why shouldn't he do a favor for the neighbor and let him have the contiguous property? So again, that's called Dina de Bar Metzra, where they have a first right of refusal to come in and buy the property. That's only true by Mecher. That's only true when you sell the field. By Matana, you can't have a right of first refusal because he's gifting it to this particular person. It's a gift. It's not about the money. It's not about the price. It's simply about the gift. And the gift is relevant to the party he's giving it to. So write it as a Matana gives him that power or that advantage, which is Dina de Bar Metzra won't apply over here. Toso wants to know what exactly is the benefit of calling it a transaction rather than a gift. Now, if you call it that it has recourse, which is that it's a gift with recourse, Tosva notes, then it actually starts to look like a mecher. The Gemara says in other places that even though Dina de Bar Metzra doesn't apply by a gift with recourse does have a Dina de Bar Metzra, because a gift with recourse means that he gives him the gift, but in truth, he just wants him to get the value. That way he guaranteed the value, which is that if someone who takes away this field from him, this gift from him, he will compensate. He will make up that differential. And so when you give a gift with recourse, that looks like a mecher already. It starts to look like a sale. And therefore, Dina de Bar Metzra will kick in. So Tosafot says, I don't really understand. If you put both matana and mecher or recourse in the same document, all the advantages that you would have gotten go away or become moot, because you're actually getting the worst of both worlds instead of the best of both worlds. So then Tosafot says, Yesh lamar d'shnei shtarot kotev lo, that he actually writes him two documents. One document that has it as a matana, and one document that gives it as a mecher. Im tzarich l'achrayut, if he needs recourse, maret shel mecher, he shows the document that it was a sale, and that way he can then come back and make a claim against the gifter here, the one who gave him the gift. Im tzarich l'dina de bar metzra, if he wants to protect against the first right of refusal of the neighbors, maret shel matana, and he brings out the matana. So he has two contracts, not written into a single contract, but two separate contracts that he brings out that give him the ability now to exercise the better right in each case. If he needs recourse, he takes out the sale document. If he needs Dina de Bar Metzra, he takes out the Matana document. But if they were written together in a single document, he would lose the advantages, at least of the Dina de Bar Metzra. He still would have the recourse advantages. But then just write as a Mecher, what advantage do you have in writing Matana? So Tosafot claims that they're actually written in two different documents, and that's what gives him the advantage. Other people suggest here that simply the recipient didn't want to take it as a gift. So he wrote it as a gift and a sale to placate the one who was receiving it, that it looks like a sale, not like a gift. Or he wants it to look to other parties, that it looks like a sale, not a matana. Whatever the reason is that he wanted to combine them, that's why others suggest that he put them both in a single document, that it's both a gift and a sale. But in that case, it avoids this stira with Shmuel, because it makes it into the equivalent of a matana now. And a matana does not require kesef. And therefore, that breitah is talking about a case of matana, not mecher, according to Rav Ashi. And that would not be a stira with Shmuel. Now, the one thing to note here, we saw this back on Daf Tet Amud Aleph. There, the Balei Tosafot say that this is a stira to the Gemara that we saw in Gitin, that you're not allowed to write a document on something that's nizdayif. You can't write a document on something that can be forged. So that's true by Niyar. So you can't use erased paper. You can only use paper that is clean. Because once it's clean, you'll see the erasure if somebody changes or alters the document. If it's already an erased paper, when someone writes on it, you can't tell if it's erasure for the first time or the second time. And therefore, you can't use that for a document. On the other hand, Kli Cheres is something that can be Nizdayif. So anyway, you can erase it, remove it, and write on it. And nobody would know that you changed anything on the Cheres. So how come over here it's allowing you to use cheres for a contract? So Tosafot, back on Tetam and Aleph, gives a number of answers. One answer is the fact that, which is according to Rabbi Eliezer, that says, or as it says, edim sira karte. And so therefore you do not need the document to be a document that's not nizdayif, because it's Edei Mesira are the Ikar vehicle or mechanism for the transaction, and therefore the Kli Cheres, the fact that you can forge it doesn't matter. That's one. Number two is, he suggests, that the need for a shtar that is not able to be forged is only true when you're talking about a shtar raya. You're talking about a document of evidence, an evidentiary document that's going to be around for a long time. And therefore, it's subject or apt to altercation by people because it's around for so long. But then when you use a shtar kinyan is use and done. Now, sometimes it doubles as a shtar raya, but the ikar purpose here is for the transaction to take place. And therefore, it's just a momentary document, and everybody can see the document, and you'll know what it says in it, and it's done. Afterwards, if it's a use for shtar raya, that's okay, but that's not the primary purpose. And when the primary purpose is for a transaction, then we don't worry about the fact that you can forge or change the document, because it's all happening right now. It's not about the future. The other answer that's given by, I think, the Rabbeinu Tam, who suggests that there are different ways of writing on Kli Cheres. You can write on Kli Cheres with ink, and that's problematic because that can be erased or altered, but you also can etch into Kli Cheres. And so what he says is that they're different, when we're talking about Cheres in one case and here Cheres over here, talking about different types or modes of writing. And if I differentiate between the modes of writing, then I can make a difference in the cases. Niyar machuk is no good. Clean niyar is good. Cheres is good when you etch into it. Cheres is no good when you write with ink on it. That's how he explains this braita to reconcile it with the Gemara in Gittin. Rabbi Chazaka minolon. How do we know that Chazaka works? Amar Chizki, Amar Kra, v'shavu b'areichem asher tafastem. That you will reside in those cities that you took hold of, that you seem to have acquired. B'meh tafastem. How did you acquire it? How did you take possession of it? B'yeshiva. By living there. The Beir Bishmel Tana, v'yirashtem uta, v'yishavtem ba. Says that you will inherit the land, v'yishavtem ba, and then you will dwell in it. B'meh yirashtem. How do you acquire it? B'yeshiva. By dwelling in it, by living in it. The Ritva notes, now whether that literally means you have to live there physically, you have to establish residence there in order for that to be a chazakah, or is yeshiva the more generic term, which means to take up residence. Taking up residence means I move a mattress in, I do something that indicates that I might or would live there. So it's questionable about how literally we take the word yeshiva over here. That might actually be the difference between the two psukim that are quoted here, because the first pasuk that's quoted from Yirmiyahu says, "V'shavu b'arechem asher tafastem." And over there, it says, you will dwell in your cities that you took possession of. Which it makes it sound that you actually established residence or did something on the land itself. Whereas the pasuk from the Torah, which says, "V'rashtem uta v'shavtem bo," seems to me that the Yerusha is acquired through the Hana'ah of the Yeshiva. That all you have to do is simply show up and dwell there. You don't actually have to do anything physical to change the land or establish it as a residence. But the difference in those pesukim might result in the different views as to what is required here, what type of yeshiva is required here in order to establish a chazakah. Now, v'she'en lehem achrayut, ein niknim ele b'mishicha. The metaltalim can only be acquired through mishicha, minolan. How do we know that that is a vehicle for acquisition of metaltalim? That comes from the pasuk that we mentioned numerous times before by the Eved Ivri, which is in Parshat Behar, when it deals with the Shemitah over there. There is a pasuk in the middle that talks about selling. This was in the Memorot that talked about the Midah Keneged Midah. This was the first thing that the person ran into a problem with when he was transacting in Perot Shvit, was that he started to sell off his metaltalim. Next day, then he sold off his karka. So that is written in the pasuk. V'hi timkrum emkar d'amitecha, ukano miyad amitecha. Davar ha'nikne miyad liyad. Something that is passed from hand to hand. So that's a kinyan mishicha, which is that it's given from one individual and the other individual takes possession of it. So you have a kinyan mishicha, and that is the vehicle or the means by which you acquire mitautlin. Rabbi Yochanan de'amar dvar Torah ma'ot konot. This is a machloka that we'll get to in the Gemara in Baba Metzia as to what is the primary vehicle of transaction for acquiring. Is that ma'ot konot min ha-Torah? Min ha-Torah, if you simply give kesef, you buy the metaltalim, you have to do no more. Ah, so then what's the kinyan mishicha for? That is based on a takanat chachamim, so that the seller can't say, nisfufuchi techa ba'aliyah. Because if we say the ma'ot konot, that means that the buyer comes along and pays for the merchandise. The merchandise is still sitting in the seller's possession. All of a sudden a fire breaks out in the seller's property. and the item of the buyer is there. The seller watches, because it's not his anymore. He's not going to lose anything. The buyer already owns it. So he's going to say, well, sorry, he's losing his money. It's not my money. I don't have to take care of it. On the other hand, what the Chachamim said is, if we force a kinyan mishicha, then it'll become clear that the acquisition doesn't take place until he actually physically takes it. And then we won't run into this problem of nisrafu chitecha baliyah. So that's what Rabbi Yochanan says, that the ikar vehicle, or the way to have a kinyan take place in the Torah, is ma'ot. Mishicha is only an institution, the Rabbanon. So then what are you doing here? Ma'ika the Meimar. What's the Mishnah mentioning mishicha? Tana takanta, the Rabbanon tani. In Ocharami, the Mishnah is telling you the institution, mi the Rabbanan. This is the normal vehicle for acquisition now. True, in a Torah, kesef would suffice. But now, when people transact, the only way to transact is through kinyan mishicha, because even though the ma'ot konot min ha-Torah, the Rabbanan forfeited your ability to do that because of this problem, and therefore now you need a kinyan mishicha in addition to the ma'ot konot, or the monies that transact. There's a sheet, the Reish Lakish over there, who believes that kinyan mishicha is the ikar vehicle for acquisition. All right, now the Gemara says, nechasim she'en lehem achrayut, this is the kinyan agav, minahani mile. How do we know that a kinyan agav works? Amar Chizkiyah, the Amar Kral, the Pasuk says, Vayitem lehem aviyem matanot, their father gave them gifts, im arei mitzurot bi Yehuda, with fortified cities in Yehuda. Found the story in Divrei Yamim, Vayishkav Yoshafat im avutav, Vayikaver im avutav biir David, so the king Yoshafat passes away. And then it talks about the children of Yoshafat, and then in the third Pasuk there it says, Vayitem lehem aviyem, matanot rabot the kesef ulezav ulemigdanot im arei mitzurot biyuda et hamamlacha natan Yoram ki hu habechor, and the inheritor of the throne was his son Yehoram, who was the eldest. And then Yoram, after he ascends to the throne, goes ahead and kills all of his brothers in order to consolidate his power and solidify his claim on the throne. What you see here is that the gifts were given along with the cities or the properties. So that's a kinyan agav. Now, Ibailu, the Gemara asks a question, which will occupy us for most of the remainder of the daf, which is, binyan siburim or lo? When you do a kinyan agav, do the metatlim have to be physically placed on the property, stacked on the property? Or is a kinyan agav a figurative type of kinyan? If I can make a kinyan on the karka, the metatlim come along, even though they're not sitting on the karka. So that raises an issue. If they're sitting on the karka, you have something called kinyan chotzer, which is what we discussed a little bit yesterday. We spoke about the fact that he could be socheret mikomo. He could rent the space, and through renting the space, he can acquire the item. Now, I mentioned yesterday that was a kinyan agav. That is because of the controversy that surrounds here, which is, why does the kinyan agav create siburim? If you require siburim, you already had a kinyan chatzer. That leads some of the Rishonim to explain that kinyan chatzer only works in certain circumstances. One of them, which everybody agrees, is it has to be a chatzer mishtamer. It has to be a chatzer that is guarded. In order for your property to acquire in your behalf, it has to be a place that is protected. So you could simply answer that the case of kinyan chatzer is a case where it's mishtamer. Case here of kinyan agav is a case where it's a chatzer sheina mishtamer. And there you don't have to worry about it. And there it won't make the kinyan unless you have a kinyan agav. But now Yeshua suggests that the reason that it's a kinyan agav and not a kinyan chatzer is because of the use of the word im. In the Pasuk, im means together with, which makes it look like a kinyan agav and not a kinyan chatzer. Whereas the Ritva suggests that there's a fundamental difference in the way that a kinyan chatzer and a kinyan agav works. That a kinyan chatzer can only be done if you own the property prior to the metaltalim coming there. Chatzer only works if you own the property before the metaltalim were there. Kinyan agav can be even effectuated when the kinyan on the property and the metaltalim happen simultaneously. And since this is a case of de'im, when it happens simultaneously, the only vehicle for kinyan here is a kinyan agav and not a kinyan chotzer. And that might be the nature of the question over here, which is, this is a case where the metaltalim are already on the property. So de'im and siburim are not. For that reason, or those differentiations, when we explained the Gemara yesterday, I mentioned it was a kinyan agav. It could have been a kinyan chotzer, but to be safe, we said it was a kinyan agav because kinyan chatzer does not work in all circumstances or all cases. So now the Gemara is asking, by a kinyan agav, do they have to physically be on the property or not be on the property? So Rabbi Yosef, Tashma, let's look at this Mishnah. Rabbi Kiva Omer, Karka Koshu, a small portion of land, meaning that some de minimis amount of land is good for a number of things. Chayevet bepeah. Number one, it is obligated to have peah separated from it. Ubi bikurim. And if you have a tree there, you're gonna have to bring the peirot up to Yerushalayim. It's left over there, pruzbol. To write a pruzbol, which allows you to be exempt from shmitat ksafim. Leknoti ma nechasim she'en lahem achrayut. And to purchase property, to purchase non-real property along with it. The kinyan agav. So now, let's just look through all of these items. Both Tosafot and Rashi note over here that the word vidui should not appear in this Mishnah. You might have thought that a vidui maser also requires property in order to do vidui maser. The reason being the same as Bikurim, which is Bikurim says that the aretz asher natatali, the land that you gave me. Well, you can't lie and say it's the land you gave me if you don't own any land. That's why there's a requirement of land ownership in order for you to say Mikra Bikurim and to bring the Bikurim. And say the Mikra Bikurim. You would have thought the same thing by Vidui Maaser. What Rashi points out is that the Lashon by Vidui Maaser is a little different. It says, V'yichol amar, v'arech et amecho et Yisrael, v'et adamar shenatata lanu. Over there it says, and the land that you gave to us. Since the terminology there is a generic gave to us, doesn't mean that it has to be your property. It means that Klal Yisrael as a whole got the land of Israel. And therefore you can say that without that being a property. Therefore there's no necessity for land to say Vidui Maaser. That's not what Bikurim, because by Bikurim it says Asher Natatali, the land that you gave to me, there you're specifying it's your land and you got the land. So because of that difference, Rashi says that Bikurim are included in this Mishnah. Vidui Maaser should not be included in the Mishnah. Tosafot says the exact same thing, except that he says you don't need Rashi's reason. Simply says that that's what the Yerushalmi says, that Vidui Maaser is not require karka in order to perform or to say Vidui Maaser. Right, the next thing is V'chtov ala pruzbol. To write a pruzbol on it. Now, why does a karka kosho help you for pruzbol? Pruzbol is a document by which you turn over all your outstanding loans to Beit Din, then say Beit Din is now the official collector and not you, and therefore it's not subject to Shemitah Ksafim, because Shemitah Ksafim warns you against pressing the borrower to pay you back. But you're no longer the collector here. Beit Din becomes the official collector. So then, why do you need karka koshu? What is the karka relevant at all? So Rashi says over here, it simply has to do with a takana, which is that chachamim are usually only mitakin things when it's matsui, when it's a common occurrence. Lending money with land as collateral is a normal occurrence. People tend not to lend money without any collateral. If you don't have land, they won't lend you money. So, as you know today, it's easier for the bank to lend people money when they have a house or when they own property, because then that's collateral. Again, collateral that doesn't walk. And so what Rashi says is, Techi tikun hilal pruzbol, ashibud karko tikun de milve hamitsuyahi. It's a normal type of loan. So when they established pruzbol, it was for normal transactions and normal loans. Normal loans involve collateral of property. So that's why you need a karka kosho in order for the pruzbol to work. It's a technical need. It's not a absolute need. I mean that you could have a pruzbol without karka. That's just not the way the takana was set up. That's the way Rashi learns it. On the other hand, the Rabbeinu Tam suggests over here that the reason is because you can collect through the karka. Because we saw this in the Gemara and Gitin. What you could do is he can collect from the karka. But the karka doesn't equal the value of the loan. Because what I can do is I can seize the property and then the borrower can come back and buy the property back from me. When he buys it back from me, I can seize it again. And the Gemara talks about a case like that. Like the case of Katina de Abaye that we saw in the Gemara in Gitin and in Ketubot, that you can collect over and over again from the same small piece of property. I mean that you can, through one single piece of property, even though it doesn't equal the value of the loan, you can seize it multiple times. Once they buy it back from you, you can seize it multiple times, and it can eventually add up to the value of the loan. The Rashbam says it in Bava Batra even more sharply, which is that the karka is as if collected. It's the equivalent of having a mashkon for a loan, which also is not affected by Shemitah. So that's why karka kosho works, because it provides a vehicle of collection. And so since the collection is as if done already, there's no more longer subject to Shemitah Ksafim. Shemitah Ksafim means I can't press him to collect, but I've collected already. Just like a loan with a mashkon also is not shamut. That's not affected by Shemitah Ksafim, because I already have my payment in hand. Then I don't have to press him for payment because I have the collateral. Okay, so then if he wants to pay and take the collateral back, that's fine. But as far as I'm concerned, I've got the repayment of my loan. It makes it sound like the pruzbol was completely unnecessary because you already have the karka as if collected. So the Balei Tosafot over there mentioned that The reason why they have to institute Prusbol is because Lo Ratzu Beit Din La'Korah Takanat Shvi'it Min HaTorah. So even though technically it would have avoided the need for Shemitah, they wanted to put Prusbol in place in order to remind people that there is a Shemitah, and that Shemitah Kesafim is still relevant, even though in these particular cases it's not relevant. V'yamart Bin and Siburim, if you require the items be stacked on the property, Kol Shehu L'Mai Chazi, then what do you mean? Kinyan Agav is done by any amount, like a small piece of property. Then what's the point of using a small piece of property if you have to stack all the metatlim on it? It just doesn't work. You need a property that's big enough to hold the metatlim. So Targuma, Rav Shmuel Bar Bisna Kamei de Rav Yosef, Kagon Shenatz Ba Machat. He stuck a little pin in there. You can do a Kinyan Agav, you just have to have a small item. Tarka Kosho, you just put a pin into the ground and now you have a Kinyan Agav. Kamei de Rav Yosef, Kabastan. So the way Rashi translated it, Tziartani. Oh, you're causing me pain. What a headache. Or you can see here on the side the image spot, and that's what they bring down. You stole things. I mean, like you're tricking us over here. We've seen in other places the word kavustus that we heard before was a kidnapper of some sort, but you've stolen something. And the Aruch says, Gadam Shemaret Chavel Dvar Mitunaf. Somebody is showing you something disgusting. Or he brings from the Rif that it's possibly a fakta bnei mayai lakia. You turn my stomach over with this answer. All of these basically say that Rav Yosef wasn't so happy with the answer here. Ichbil tana l'shmina machat. You think that the Mishnah went out of its way to tell you that a karka koshu can work as a kinyan agav to acquire a needle? Why would a Mishnah take all that time or expression to tell you that you can acquire a needle with a called karka koshu? It just doesn't seem like it's a worthwhile endeavor. That's true that Mishnah will say many things in many places. But over here, you usually deal with things that are matsui, things that are common. This is like an uncommon case, so uncommon that it doesn't really tell you anything, it doesn't really give you any information. So I'm a Ravashi. Ravashi says, why is it so ridiculous? Man lemalan delo talaba marganita de shavi alfazuze. Wait a minute, value has nothing to do with size. Sometimes you have a diamond, you have a jewel that is tiny, and that is worth 1,000 zuz. So you can have a karka kosher which you stick a pin into, and then on that pin is a huge diamond, or you just put the diamond down on the karka kosher. So size is not by definition value. And so therefore you can have karka kosher that's acquiring a very expensive item that is very small. And so therefore I don't see this as being a question, but rather that karka kosher teaches you that you can do a kinyan agav. But from there you can't prove anything because you see here that it could be tsuberim. It could be the item is on the property with a kosher, and yet it's doing a kinyan agav. And so that's no proof from that Mishnah. So Tashma, let's bring it from this case. Da'amar Rabbi Elazar, Maseh b'Madoni Echad, Shaya b'Yerushalayim. There was this Madoni, this individual who lived in Yerushalayim. Shayelo Metalkalim Harbe. He was very wealthy and he had a tremendous amount of items that he owned. Bikesh Nandem L'Matana, and he wanted to gift them to someone else. Amrlo Einlo Takana, Achiknaim Agave Karka. There's no way for you to do this or ensure that the transaction goes through unless you do a kinyan agav. The Gemara will ask in a second what exactly that means. Why couldn't he use other forms of kinyan? Ma'asa, halach v'lakach beit sela samuch liyushalayim. He went ahead and bought a beit sela. The way the Gemara is going to say the havamin is, beit sela means a tiny amount of land. V'amar tzvoni zeh l'ploni, the northern side belongs to so-and-so. V'imo me'atzonu me'achaviot, and along with that he'll get 100 of my sheep, 100 of my barrels of wine, umate. And then he passed away, v'kayimu et divarav. And the chachamim upheld the transaction. Said it's a good transaction. There was a kinyan agav over here. V'yar bar bin and siburimba, if you say that there's a requirement that they be stacked on the property, beit sela l'may chazi. What is a beit sela? That's like a tiny piece of land. As Rashi says over here, you think that it's a male rochav sela, shumadbeya. It's the size of a coin, a piece of land the size of a coin. How do you fit 100 son and 100 chaviot, barrels of wine, on top of a coin-sized piece of property? Or, the other way to learn it is that it was a very narrow and tall piece of land, which is like a coin standing on its side. So it had the shape of a sela, but either way, it's a minuscule piece of property. There's no way you could have done a kinyan agav that could mea tzon and mea chaviot. So Gemara says, misavar beit sela sela mamush. You think that Beit Sela means literally a Sela? My Sela? The Nafish Tuva. A Sela here is that it was a big piece of land. But my Karile Sela. So then why do they call it Sela? If it was a huge piece of land, why are they calling it Sela? The Kashi Kesela. It was infertile land, meaning that it was not productive land. It was rocky terrain. It was unproductive. So therefore, you could buy a large tract of it for a very small price. Because in their day, the premium to land was land that was fertile and that you could plant and was productive. Where you buy a big piece of rock, then it's not valuable. So he was able to buy a large piece of land that was called Sela. And it was called Sela because of the nature of the property, not the size or the value of the property. So again, I can't prove anything from here because at first I thought couldn't be a Kinyan Agam that required Siburim because I have such a small piece of property and so many metalkalin. And the Gemara says, no, it was a large piece of property and it was called Beit Sela because of the character of the land, not because of the price or the size of the land. Over here, the Tosfot Riya Zakein says, why didn't we save Im Tomar? Why don't we give it to him? Or why don't they say they gave it over to him? Mishum mitzvah dekayim divrei amet. Who says they gave the property to the recipient because of the Kinyan Agav made by the gifter? Maybe it was given because he passed away, and there's a mitzvah dekayim divrei amet. So here the Tosfot Riya Zakein says that that can't be the case. Reishlamar, dilo kona michayim, lo yinu nimlo amatana. That if he did not acquire it while he was still alive, they would not have given it to him. That we only say mitzvah kayim remeit for something that he's taken out of his possession. Kagon, holech mane leploni. Give this 100 zuz to so and so. Dilno temaachi are the kaimelam of mishemeit. The matnat shchimei rabbe mixat by kinyan. That when you have a matnat shchimei rabbe mixat, he doesn't give you all his property. Why do you require kinyan? Afagav demit. Am I name a mitzvah lekayim divrei amet? Elalav shmina ki deprishto. It must be like I'm saying, which is there's a difference in the nature of a matnat shchemera and a mitzvah lekayim divrei amet, which is that there's only a din of mitzvah lekayim divrei amet when he creates a transaction or he does a transaction. It's not where he is instructing people to do something. Right, so now the Gemara brings the next proof. Tashma. Dam Rav Yudom Arav. There was an incident where an individual fell ill in Yerushalayim. Ki Rabbi Elazar. And this is following the shita of Rabbi Elazar, as Rashi notes over here, that goes through the machloket as to the divrei shchimera. By divrei shchimera, a person is on his deathbed when he gives his last will and testament, are they kiktuvim ukusurim dami? Which the Rabbanan say that it's as if they are written and documented, and therefore the transaction goes through. Who argue on Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Elazar, who says that that's not the case. Divrei shchemera require a kinyan. Without a kinyan, they are not final or not binding. So this is according to that sheet of Rabbi Elazar that you need a kinyan over here, because otherwise you could just argue that he's a shchemera and he doesn't need a kinyan. So why do you need a kinyan at all? So either this story is a case where he's on his deathbed and it's according to Rabbi Elazar who says you require a kinyan for a matnat shchemera, or v'amila bari haya, or other people say that he was a healthy individual, kirabonon. And this is like the Shita de Rabbanon, that when you're healthy, everybody agrees that a matana of a bari requires a kinyan. Shayulo metalkalim harbe, again, he has large wealth and possessions. Bikesh linam be matana, he wanted to gift them. Amrlo ein lo takana ad shiknei agav karka. The only method or mechanism you can use here is a kinyan agav by karka. Masa, halach v'lekach beit rovas amokhli Yerushalayim. When he purchased a Beit Rova Akav, which is the way that land was measured, it's based on the Mishkan, the Chatzer Mishkan, which is 100 Amot by 50 Amot, which is a Beit Satayim. So a Beit Rova Akav, the relationship between Satayim and Rova Akav will give you the area that is meant by a Beit Rova Akav. There's 6 Kav and a Sa'ah, and then you're talking about a Rova Akav over here, so you're talking about 1/24 of a Sa'ah. And that's based on a Beit Satayim, which is 5,000 square amot. So that's 1/24 of that amount. Bamar tefach al tefach leploni. 1 tefach by 1 tefach to so-and-so. Vimo me'at sona me'at chaviot. Along with that, you get 100 sheep and 100 barrels of wine. Umeit, and again, he passed away. V'kaimu chachamim et dvarav. Chachamim upheld his gift. V'amar binan siburim. If you require that the metalkalim be stacked on the property itself, Tefach al tefach, tamay chazi. Tefach al tefach will not incorporate all the metalkalim that this guy gifted to him. It says, achamay eskinan l'dmei. Over here we're talking about they gifted him that monetary value of that many sheep and that many barrels of wine. Not literally that he gave him the sheep or the barrels of wine, but he gave him the value of that many sheep and that many wine. And therefore, he could stack it on tefach al tefach. You could stack the value of those items on a tefach al tefach space. That would be no problem. That makes a lot of sense. If you think that he's literally having a transaction with 100 tzon and 100 barrels of wine, then why did he just use a kinyan mechalipin? And this is where the Gemara goes on to say, how come the Gemara keeps saying over here, we had two incidents, and they say the only way to have the transaction go through is use a kinyan agav. Now to ask why they didn't use a kinyan mishicha is very easy, because like we mentioned yesterday, when you have 100 tzon, to do kinyan mishicha or kinyan agbah just takes too long. It's too burdensome. It's too tedious. But you could do other kinyanim, which work in those instances besides kinyan agav. One of those is a kinyan chalipin. So why don't you use a kinyan chalipin over here, which is a representative kinyan, and then you wouldn't have to do a kinyan agav. You won't have to purchase the karka. And number two is you won't have to do an individual kinyan for each one of them. One kinyan chalipin works for all of the tzon or all the chaviot over here. This does raise the issue as to why kinyan chalipin is not mentioned in our Mishnah. If kinyan chalipin is a vehicle for acquisition in kinyan, why is it mentioned in the Mishnah? So the Mishnayim give different answers. One answer is that the Mishnah only notes kinyanim that are different between karka and metaltalin. Gives you those that work by karka but do not work by metaltalin. Then it gives you the ones that work by metaltalin and not by karka. Chalipin works by both of them, so that's why it's not mentioned in the Mishnah. The other possibility has to do with what the Rabbeinu Tam said earlier in the Masechta, back on the Gimel, where the Rabbeinu Tam said that kinyan chalipin is like shavei kesef, that it's k'ein kesef. From our Gemara, you see that a kinyan chalipin is equated to kinyan kesef, and it can be used in place of a kinyan kesef. That's the case. Then when you mention kesef in the Mishnah, that incorporates in it or includes within it the kinyan chalipin. Those are the reasons brought by the Rishonim as to why it's not mentioned in the Mishnah. But nevertheless, the Gemara here says, it must be that he's giving you the monetary value of these items and not the actual items, because otherwise he could have used a kinyan chalipin. But if you say that it is money that he's giving him, then kinyan chalipin will not work, because we have a principle that ain kinyan chalipin bekesef. Kinyan chalipin does not work by money. Velamai. So Gemara says, okay, we'll accept your explanation here that it's the demay. It was for money. So now if it's for money, he had to use a kinyan agav because a kinyan chalipin wouldn't work. Then the Gemara says, nikneu ni'alei b'mishicha. Why don't you use a kinyan mishicha for the monies? Now, before we said, oh, he didn't want to use a kinyan mishicha over here because there were too many animals, there were too many chaviot. That's only if he's literally gifting him those items. But he's giving him the monetary value, it's just the money. It's just the money. Why can't he do a kinyan mishicha on the money? Ella, deleta the mekabel matana. The recipient of the gift wasn't there. So if the recipient of the gift isn't there, he can't make the kinyan. He can't make the kinyan mishicha to bring it into his possession. So where it says, v'nizkinu ni'alei agav acher. So why don't you grant it to him through a third party? We know that you can be zachin v'adam shelo b'fanav. You can take possession of something on behalf of another party. So why is this guy over here not gifting it to him by giving it to a third party? And that would create the gift. So lo samcha date. He did not trust the people. He felt that if he gave it to those people to take it acquisition or acquired on behalf of another party, they would just keep it and they would never give it to him. So since he wasn't trusting of the parties there, he wanted to do a kinyan that did not involve giving it to another party. Savar shamit vachilu. That if I give it to them to give to him, then they won't do that. They'll end up eating it themselves or taking it themselves. Velamai ein lo takana. Then why are the Chachamim saying that there was no other way to do this? There are other ways to do it. It just happens to be that he couldn't do them, but there are other ways to do this. You can do it through kinyan agav through acher, or a kinyan mishicha through someone else. Chachikamar lamai delo sam chadate. No. Based on the fact that he didn't trust anybody there, ain lo takana shikneim agave karka. There's no solution to the problem until he does a kinyan agav. But ain Chachamim, had he trusted someone there? There are other solutions to the problem, which is he could then a kinyan mishicha yede acher. Have someone else take possession of the item on behalf of the recipient. So over here, the Gemara says we have alternative vehicles of kinyan that could work over here. Gemara introduces the possibility of kinyan chalipin. Gemara rejects that and says that it's dealing with money. Ein matbeya nikna bechalipin. We'll see this in the Gemara Baba Metzia, that kinyan chalipin does not work with money. So since kinyan chalipin doesn't work with money, that would not have been a way to solve the problem. Gemara says, okay, so now you can't do a kinyan chalipin, but now that you've reduced it down to the monetary value that he was giving him and not the actual items, he can use a kinyan mishicha. So why doesn't he use a kinyan mishicha? So it says that leta b'mekabel, that the recipient was not there. The recipient wasn't there to give him his kelim, to put it into his kelim, or to do some sort of kinyan mishicha, but here he wasn't there. And then Rashi makes a small note here, which is important. V'acher lo yasham shechafetz b'hanato. He had no friends. The recipient had no friends there. Shel koneh liten kelav b'shvilo. Because if that was the case, they could have just lent the kelim. They could have just given kelim to the gifter, their kelim, and they'd be zocheh on behalf of the recipient. So what you have to say is that there was nobody there that was willing to give up their kelim or to volunteer or lend their kelim in order to have the kinyan go through. And so the recipient wasn't there, and nobody who wanted the benefit of the recipient was there. And that's why the kinyan mishicha doesn't work. So now, based on the girsa that we have in our Gemara, the progression of the Gemara according to Rashi is, we can't use a kinyan chalipin because we're talking about money. We can't do a kinyan mishicha because the recipient isn't there, and nobody there wanted to do it on his behalf. Then what about kinyan through someone else? Then lo samcha data, he didn't trust them. Therefore, the conclusion of the Gemara according to this is, number one, be'inan siburim. You do need the item stacked on the property itself. That's number one. And that's why the Gemara switched it to be money and not chaviot. And number two is that the Gemara continues to believe that the transaction here is through money. Because had it been with chaviot and sown, he could have done a kinyan chalipin ayidei acher. Even though he couldn't do a kinyan chalipin with the individual because the Mekabel Matana wasn't there, but he could still have done a Kinyan Chalipin with a third party. And that Kinyan Chalipin would have solved all the problems. Why don't we say that's the case? Because we're dealing with money. And money cannot be acquired by Chalipin. Okay, so then do Meshicha. The guy's not there. Maybe someone else will do it on his behalf. Well, nobody was interested in taking care of him or helping him out, so he had nobody to do it with. And he didn't want to give it to any of these individuals because he didn't trust them. And so because of that, we're left with the situation in which Kinyan Agav was the only vehicle, and in Kinyan Agav, Be'in and Siburim. So that's what Tosfot says Rashi's Girsa lays out. On the other hand, of Rova Sfarim Katuv Girsa Acheret. Says majority of the Sfarim have a different Girsa. Elamai L'dmei. So then, what about money? L'kneu Ni'alei B'mishicha. Then he should do it through a Mishicha. Elamai L'chalameimar Deleta D'mekabel Matanad L'kneu. So just like there is no person here to accept a meshicha, so too there's no one here to do a chalipin. The recipient party is not there to do a chalipin. So in the Girsa of Rashi, the hochanami doesn't apply over here because it's not and also. The Gemara is answering the question of the kinyan meshicha. Why can't he do a kinyan meshicha? Because leta de mekabel matana, the recipient is not there. Whereas according to the Girsa and the Tosafot, the Hachanami is saying just like he's not there with regards to the Kinyan Meshicha, we can say the same thing with regards to the Kinyan Chalipin. And this is the Gemara's rejection of saying that it's money, going back to the original assumption that these are the items themselves. And just like over here, by Meshicha, the reason we couldn't do it is because the guy's not there, so too by the Chalipin, the reason we can't do the Kinyan Chalipin is because he's not there. Ufir Girsa Zu Umedet Hachanami Mistavra. And according to this Girsa, it doesn't stand. The original solution of the Gemara that we're talking about money here and not possessions is not the final answer. The reason for the failure over here has nothing to do with it. We're transacting about value and money, but it has to do with the fact that Kinyan Chalipin doesn't work when you have a third party there. The Kinyan Suda only works if the buyer is there or the recipient of the gift is there. And so you have very different conclusions according to this Girsa of the Gemara versus the Girsa of Rashi. According to the Girsa of Rashi, the Kinyan Chalipin is knocked out of the process because we're talking about money now. He's gifting money, not objects. So Chalipin's out. Then we move over to Meshicha and we dealt with the issues that revolve around Meshicha. On the other hand, the Girsa that Tosafot says the other Sfarim had, the reason that it failed over here is because the recipient wasn't there. Not because we were doing money. In the end, the Gemara rejects that we're talking about value and goes back to the original assumption that we're talking about metaltalin. So then why couldn't he acquire the metaltalin, either ayidei chalipin or ayidei meshicha? Because he wasn't there. What that shows you is that when you're not there, kinyan meshicha doesn't work and kinyan chalipin doesn't work. And that's where Rav Shemaya came to a conclusion that Kinyan Chalipin only works with the buyer, doesn't work with through a third party. Tosfot in the end rejects that assumption, saying that we find so many places that Kinyan Chalipin work even on Yedei, a third party. And that Tosfot premises on the fact that Pela Gadol Hei B'Einei Rivan Sherei Masim B'Choyom Shkonim Suda Shlo B'Fnei HaKoneh HaMekabel Matana. That many times that we do a Kinyan Sudar without the recipient party being there, we do it on their behalf, and it works. And therefore he rejects this conclusion of Rav Shemaya. There he says, according to that Girsa, the answer of the Gemara will be the same that Rashi gave. Why by Kinyan Meshicha did he not have someone lend the Kelim to the Koneh, or give Kelim so that he could put it in there, and that would give the Kinyan Meshicha? It's because nobody was interested in helping out or taking care of this buyer or this recipient of the gift. And you can say the same thing by Kinyan Chalipin. And Ochanami, because someone could have lent a handkerchief here. Someone could have done the Kinyan Chalipin on his behalf. But nobody was interested in taking care of him, or nobody was friendly with him. And it might have been a friction in the relationships here, because you can see the guy doesn't trust leaving his property with them to give to the other parties. And that might have been a mutual distrust that the other parties didn't want to help him out, because there was a certain amount of tension between the parties. And so that's how Tosfot in the end says you don't have to come to the conclusion of Rav Shemaya, even with the other Girsa. And therefore he rejects this conclusion of Rav Shemaya, and again reads the Gemara, similar to the way Rashi does, which is that there's nobody there to do it on his behalf. So again, here, even though we're talking about small pieces of land, they could possibly have been Siburim, they could have possibly had something stacked on it. And again, I can't prove whether you need Siburim or not. Don't need Siburim. So Tashma. Masebe Rabban Gamliel v'Zkenim Shehu Baim B'Sfina. They were traveling on a boat trip, they were out at sea. Amalem Rabban Gamliel v'Zkenim. Rabban Gamliel says, Isur Shaniti Lamud. The maser that I'm going to take off in the future, Natun Lo Yoshua, goes to Yoshua, as Rashi points out. This is Rabbi Yoshua ben Hanania, who's a Levi. So this is Maaser Rishon, which goes to the Levi. And I give that to Rabbi Yoshaya. Umekomo Muskarlo. And the place where it's located, I rent to him. V'Isur Acher Shani Atid Lamud. The next Maaser, which I'm going to take off, it's clear here that this is either in the third or the sixth year of the cycle, because he's taking off Maaser Rishon and then Maaser Ani. Maaser Ani is only relevant in the third and the sixth years. It's not relevant in the other years because it's Maaser Sheni. So here it's Maaser Ani that he's taking off. Natol Akiva ben Yosef. That's given to Rabbi Akiva. Kadesh Yizko Bo, the Aniim. Since he was the Gabai for the Aniim, or Gabai Tzedakah for the Aniim, he gave it to him to take possession of it. Umukumo Muskar Lo. And again, I'm renting the space under it so he can take possession of it. Shma Minah Binan Siburim Ba. So there you see that you need it to be stacked on the property, because he's renting them the property specifically under where the items are. He doesn't just say rent them any property or give them anything to do the Kinyan Agalah. He specifies that it's the property upon which these items are sitting. So it looks like they have to be Tziburim. Where it says, Shani Otam, Kechelo Terechinu. Over there, he did it as a favor to them so that they wouldn't have to be troubled by this. That they wouldn't have to move the Maaser Rishon or Maaser Sheni from his property immediately, because it was sitting on Rabbi Gamliel's land. But now that he rented them the land, it was sitting on their own land, and therefore they could move it at their own convenience. So it was a matter of convenience, not a matter of protocol for Kinyanim, and we can't prove anything from this. The question is, what exactly is going on here with Rabban Gamliel? Rashi claims that he had left home before he had taken off Trumot and Masrot from this pile. And we know that there's a principle, Chazaka Ein Chaver. A Chaver does not leave any produce that is untithed. So fearing that he had left the produce behind and it was untithed, he wanted to tithe it right away so nobody would fall prey to eating Tevel that he had left behind, because everybody would assume that he already took off the Trumot and Masrot. So in that way, he does that. He takes it off and he exercises that right. Because it's Asur L'Shol D'Chavrin Davar She'enu Mitukan. That is what Rashi explains the case is. Tosafot, the massive Tosafot over here, takes many issues with Rashi's explanation. Just explain a couple of them quickly. Number one is that when it comes to being mafrish, trumot, and masrot, you do not have to give them to the recipient party in order for it to be hafrasha. You could just simply say that the tenth that I'm going to take off in the future in that corner, that is Maaser Rishon, and that would suffice as being a separation. And then you could say the same thing with Maaser Ani. You don't have to actually give it to the recipient in order for it to work. Second question that Tosafot says, how does this help? If he makes the pile, now you have a huge pile there, part of it is Maaser Rishon, Maaser Sheni, and the rest is Chulin. His family goes to eat from it. How do they know which is the Maaser Rishon, the Ani, and the Chulin? He's not there to tell them. And he's actually causing a problem now instead of solving a problem. Before, it was Tevil. Now I made it to Chulin and Maaser. But now it's Chulin and Maaser mixed together, and they're not going to know which is which. When they take it, they're going to end up taking from the Maaser as well. And if they eat the whole thing, retroactively, they ate Tevil because the item was never had, the item's being mufrash mimenu. So Tosfot rejects that question by saying simply it was just the amount of produce there was so great that it wasn't an issue. They would never get to the end of the pile before he got home. But still, for the question about why do you have to actually give it, you can just separate it out by saying that corner or this corner or that piece of it is the maser. And if a chaver never leaves anything behind, how did Reuven Gamliel leave without taking care of it? Oh, now he's dealing with it later? But he should have dealt with it right now. So somebody showed him answer that he left before it became tevel. And now it only became tevel later because the harvest had finished and the processing had finished. And now he wants to be mafreshit, but he wasn't there when it was finished. For other numerous reasons, because of these compounding of problems, Tosfot says that he thinks Rashi's interpretation here is incorrect. And rather, he takes up the position of the Rabbeinu Tam, who says here that this is actually talking about Bi'ur Masrot. Bi'ur Masrot is in the fourth year of the Shemitah cycle and in the seventh year in the Shemitah of the cycle. You have to do Bi'ur Masrot, which is Vidu Masr that we spoke about before, is that you have to take care of all the Masrot that are in your possession, you have to distribute them, you have to give them away. Rabbi Gamliel had left the house, taken off the Chumat Masrot. He didn't leave anything behind. Tosfot says that it's Bi'ur Masrot. And what he's trying to do here is get rid of all the Maaser in his possession. He has Maaser Rishon in his possession, he has to get rid of. So he gives it to the Levi. He has Maaser Ani in his possession, he has to give it out. So he gives it to Rabbi Akiva. That's what's going on here, and that's why he's gifting it to them and giving it to them, because their receipt is very necessary over here in order to accomplish Bi'ur Masrot. The elimination of all tithes in your possession, distributing them and giving them away. The other proof to Rabbeinu Tam's explanation over here is the fact that this Mishnah in Maaser Sheni is found amongst a whole bunch of other Mishnayot that are discussing Bi'ur Masrot. And therefore, contextually, it would make a lot of sense that it's talking about Bi'ur Masrot. Now, there are two little issues with that pshat, one of which is what happened to the Truma over here. Why does the scenario here never mention Truma? So Tosfot says, some say because Chita Achat Poter Et HaKri, even the smallest amount gets rid of Truma, so it wasn't significant enough to deal with it. Or because Truma is not subject to Vidu Maaser, which is, Tosfot in the end rejects that answer because it really is. Or the way that the Chachamim Darshan, it says, V'gam Natata L'Levi, over there he says the Gam includes Truma and Trumat Maaser. And therefore, Tosfot suggests that Truma is usually taken off very early in the process, and the Maaser they're taken off later in the process. So this is a case where the Truma was already removed or dealt with, and the Masrot were residual or needed to be dealt with at the later time. And that's why this case does not discuss the Truma, it only discusses Masrot. The last issue is the language that's used here, which is Isur Shani Atid Lamud. It says that Isur, that Maaser that I'm in the future going to take off, which makes it sound like he didn't already have it taken off. He's going to take it off here. Versus if he's dealing with Bi'ur Masrot, the Maaser would already have been separated. Since it's already separated, why do you have to say in the future it should be the Isur that already took off? So the language is problematic. There is, I think, the Me'iri must combine the two answers and say that he was being mafrish to Trumot the Masrot on the spot, but it was also very late in the year, in that season, and then it needed to be Muvu'ar right away. And therefore he separated it and then gave it to them right away in order to accomplish both. To be mafrish, the Trumot Masrot, from the items or the tevel that he left behind, but then gave it away immediately so that he could accomplish the Bi'ur Masrot, because it was a time period where he already bumped into Bi'ur Masrot. Alright, we're gonna stop here on the top of Chazayin Malav, five lines down, where the Gemara has yet to get conclusive evidence as to whether a Kinyan Agav requires Tziburim piled up on the property or not piled up on the property. Made a number of attempts to show that the size of the property or the situation made it that it didn't require Tziburim. In each case, we came up an answer that says it was Tziburim. And in this case, where it was Tziburim, we said that was a matter of convenience, not a matter of halacha. Therefore, we have no proof or answer to that question as of yet.